Hi, everybody, and welcome back. I'm Brian.
I'm Rui, and you know what? I want to take the opportunity here to thank our experts that are on the chat. I unfortunately cannot connect, but I know they've been busy answering questions and doing a great job, I hear, so fantastic. Thank you so much. And actually, we have two of them there, actually, from a different country. One is in New Zealand, and the other one is in Switzerland. So I'm sure they probably disconnected now because it's way past due their hour, but want to make sure we thank them for their help.
All right. Well, today we want to hit a demo. We want to do a demo on the features. And we did a demo in 336 on features as well, specifically looking at response groups and the manager and how that ability to log in and make changes and how that worked. Now we're going to take the different angle and the caveat where you can't be a manager in multiple queues. We're also going to look at Copark. We will preface everything with this is a demo environment. Things have been not going our way these past few hours. So hopefully everything works. In theory, it will work. And if nothing else, use your imagination. We'll tell you what should be happening if it doesn't. So, but voice has been very odd in this. So if we look on the lab, we look at the control panel. Everything's normal as we would expect it to be. This has an enterprise voice has been deployed to this environment. And we want to do call park. Now, call park's the service itself stops for unexpected reasons in this lab on a couple of our servers. So this is where things may not work as we think they should work. But we want to show a couple of things here. So we're going to go to voice features, and we default to call park. We're going to make a new orbits range. And in this orbits range, we are going to create three of them because we have three different environments that exist. We have a 2010 environment, we have a site with the Redmond pool, and we have a site with the Rome pool. Okay, so we're going to start with the 2010 pool. We're going to call this the Link Server 2010 Call Park Service. And this one will be #100 to #199. And that's the number range. Those 100 numbers are what we've decided to associate to the 2010 pool itself.
Yeah, keep in mind, you want to keep it large enough so that those numbers can be, they don't get recycled immediately.
That's right. And we also don't want them to be too big that we have a fairly large overhead and numbers that we're going to #456.72.43. I mean, that's
right.
Hard to recall and hard to say over intercom. Okay. So now we're going to do here red 2013. And this one will be 200 to 299. Now you also notice that if we wanted to do 199, this range wouldn't be valid from that particular configuration because we would have an overlap, especially true if we had different pools, which in this case we're going to do, because we wouldn't know where to go, right? Which will have the valid call park. And then finally, we're going to do a Rome. And so we're going to do a Rome call park, and here we'll do 300 to #399. Now again, you don't have to use the pound numbers in front or an asterisk. I like it. Keeps it known that it is a number that's being called. It's call park. There's no confusion, but doesn't have to be. Now, after we create this, events are going off in various places that are working, not working, making things go. We had the event viewer open on this one. We can't get to our, let's see, event viewer,
VWR.
Oh, typo, event, VW. Oh, and there it is.
There it is.
We will see within the event log that the call park service has done its thing, is starting to bring things up. And we will also see that it thinks it's ready to go, even though it isn't necessarily ready to go. But that's okay, because it's a demo. Okay. So this happens to be on the pool that is on the Redmond side. Now we'll look and we'll see a new value of 200 to 299 is listed. We'll also notice that the other pools that we created aren't listed here because they're not managed by this pool. So they are not provisioned in this pool. As we go up, we see it says it's ready. And again, the call park service says it's ready to accept requests. Anyway. So from that perspective, things should be good to go. And then call park is loaded. Okay, is it? Is it not? We'll find out. I also, because I can't load my Link management shell, I can load PowerShell. Now, something interesting for those that don't know, in Link, in PowerShell 3.0, we have the ability to not have to load a module in order to get all of our commands. It'll auto-load them as long as those modules are listed in the default location in Windows, which Link happens to be. So I can, even though I'm in normal PowerShell, I haven't loaded any modules. In fact, to prove that, just to make sure nobody questions me, here we're in a blank brand new PowerShell. I can get -cs, let's say Windows Services, and as I tab out, you'll notice stuff starts to get out. Now I can still import if I want the module for Link. It's just less value when it's in the search path that it can get to that anyway. FYI. So, there we go. Anyway.
That's nice.
I know. It's one of those little things that you didn't know until you knew.
That's right.
PowerShell
3. Or now that you know that what we know.
You know that you know what you know, even though you don't know that you know what you know?
But now we know what we didn't know.
But do you know that you know it?
I don't know. Do you know?
I don't know. All right.
What was that?
So now, as we recall, the users have to be provisioned for Call Park in their voice policy. So what I'm going to show first is visually over on the global voice policy. We will notice Call Park is not enabled. We'll go ahead and enable it. Well, that's one way we could do it. I also want to show a new user policy. And this is my confusion. Everything's on by default but Call Park. Why? I don't know. But it never is. So it's one of those things, if you're going to be using Call Park, you got to remember that. Okay. So we're going to come back here and we can do a simple command that's going to get our Call Park services that are here. So get -cs voice policy. Voice policy. And let's go ahead and select our identities, which will show us what the actual names is. Identity. And also select enable Call Park, which is the name of the attribute that we're going to be looking at. And when we look at them, we'll notice, I didn't go ahead and confirm. So that's okay. Let me commit that so I can show my example.
Now you can show it again.
Now I can just go up arrow and do it again. And yay, hey. One of them is set to true. But I want them all set to true. So as a simple solution, I can just get my voice policies. And then I can set my CS voice policies. And again, we know what the name is that we want. We want the enable call park, call transfer, no park, and we want to set that to true. By doing so, we've just turned all of our voice policies to have call park enabled, and we can verify it by once again getting our call parks to make sure everything's on. So now every user has call park. That's call configured. Now the other thing we went through is talking about the call park service itself with the max number of attempts and the time to pick up. Well, if we get the CPS configuration, we can see it's currently set to a minute 30 and only one pickup, but music on hold is on. Well, that's not what we want from a demo perspective. Now, that may be very well what we want from a real production perspective, but from a demo, that takes too long. I don't want to wait a minute and a half, and I don't want it to drop after the first time. So that kind of defeats what I'm going to be showing. So we will set the max call pickups to 3, and we'll set the call pickup timeout to 10 seconds. So it keeps trying and then drops us after the fact, after it does these 10. And we'll see the various ringbacks. Okay. Now, this is global or per site, your call park configuration. It's not a user-based configuration. It's a site-based or a global configuration. All right, so that's set. Now, this is a lab, so it may take a little bit for things to get to where we want them to get. or maybe not, you never know. And we're also having issues with our bar, which gets in the way from time to time, where I need to keep flipping it so I can get down. Okay, and so we're going to go to our client one. If it logs in, okay. Now the bar's in the way over here, but that's okay. We continually move. It's all for the good. It won't auto-hide for some reason, even though we tell it to auto-hide. Okay, so now we're going to go ahead and launch Link. Yes, it's one of these things. And we're going to log in as the various people. Now we have John. John happens to be in the pool, in the Link Server FE01 and FE02 that's in the Redmond, the on-prem pool. We have Preeta. Preeta is logged in to, oh, I forget where Preeta is logged into. Oh, she's the 2010. I don't want the 2013 client. I want to show her on the 2010, as you can see. Okay, anyway, so she's a 2010 client. So let's exit out of that and load her. And then our last one will be Holly. And Holly is on the internet. So this computer has an IP that theoretically is on the outside. And I say theoretically because it does seem to come in through the edge sometimes, but media doesn't always flow because in order for the labs to work correctly, they all have share a common IP scheme so things can get around those various IPs while not routing to the servers. They can route to one another so clients can bypass. And we'll see that in call admission control. None of that works well because things can get to everything. So, okay, so we have these three people logged in. Somebody on the LS2010 pool, somebody on the wrong box, somebody on the outside, and somebody that is on, oh, that's why. I need to move my bar again. Okay, let's go try this at the bottom back
top.
Again. Well, top, then I cover up, it's nothing. Anyway, okay. So, now we're back to John, who is on our normal pool. So what we're going to do is John's going to call Preeta. So let's go ahead and make a call. And while this thing's of calling, okay, we can see the call coming in. Again, this is a 2010 client on a 2010 pool. Everything was just configured using the 2013 world that we're in. And if it's all, there's a parking lot option, yay, so we can transfer to the parking lot. And when I do so, calls move to hold, and I got the park call. So pound 107. Now you'll also notice the first, very, very first call we've parked, and yet I'm 107. It's completely random. It's within the range, it's not going in sequence, so there's no way to predict what number you're gonna get or not gonna get. Now you'll see it's coming back to me right now. There's my 10-second callback. La 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 la. From John's perspective, he sees the call parse surface. He sees that he's trying to be transferred back to Preeta. Not the best way that they're going to see it, but then he's going to actually see that call parse surface then picks it back up again. And so it's still on hold. If I go back to John again, this is, you would only see if you actually played with this. Okay, this is offline. That didn't happen. Okay, well, my caller's still on hold. I'm still over here. Oh, trying to go back to Preeta again. Wouldn't happen this quick, but again, we set it 10 seconds to kind of demonstrate this. If I don't answer the call or I decline it, that sets it to the third rotation. Call park service is still trying to reach somebody to pick it up. And we'll see that it rings back to Preeta, who put it on hold in the first place. And we have a 10-second timeout here in a second. And we will notice it's trying to go back to Preeta. And because Preeta doesn't answer the phone, the call will fail, which means the call park service will fail as well. And due to an error, the call was disconnected. And it wasn't an error on the system. It's a little misleading. The error is you ran out of transfer backs and forths. And on number one, we get here that the call ended, call hung up. Was ended while it was on hold, right? So, nothing ever happened. So that's John's experience. John's not happy with Preeta. That didn't work the way that he expected it to. So, he's going to call back Preeta, who's going to answer the call. And she, of course, again, will try her best to get a hold of Holly. And we see pound 175 now. So Holly will enter pound 175. And call that number, and when we do, it's calling the call park service, and even missed it. See? This 10-second timer is a little bit weird. Okay, let's try this again. Faster, faster.
Quick, quick. You can do it.
I can.
Fast fingers.
Come on.
There it is.
Got it. So now the call was picked up. Now we'll go back to client two, and you can see the call was retrieved by Holly. Again, the interesting thing to consider here is that Holly's on the outside on the internet and was still able to retrieve that call, even though she's on the internet. She should also be able to park a call. That's where things have started to break down in our solution. Things aren't quite working as they're supposed to be, but if I were to call, let's say I was calling John. That's not John. That's John. And we're talking to Holly. Okay. In theory, I should be able to transfer this call. And to transfer a call in the 2013 client, rather than the transfer button, we hover the call button, and then we can see our dial pad devices and transfer call. And lately, parking lot's been grayed out. It knows it's enabled, but I don't know if it's because it's an unlicensed product of late or what's happening, but it's not working like you would expect. But it should work. It just doesn't. So, but they have their own ranges and things will work there, whether they're on the internet, whether they're in an office, whether they're in any other office. So that's Call Park. Isn't that great? Yay!
Nice.
Okay, so that's Call Park. Now we're going to move on to something a little maybe more interesting, which is the response groups.
All right.
Now, response groups, again, are not that different than what they were when we had them in 2010, or 2007 R2 for that matter.
It's
That's
pretty
right.
much the it's same
thing.
It's pretty much the same thing. It hasn't really changed much.
In 2010, we brought groups and queues into a GUI.
Yeah, because before you could only configure them through partial.
And you had to make your contact objects all manually, and there was, anyway. So it's not that it hasn't progressed, but it definitely is not progressing as quick as some would like.
Well, the fundamental architecture is still the same.
It's hard to improve on perfection.
Yes, I do agree.
Okay, so, and because we're so perfect in the response groups, this is another example where we move left to right instead of right to left, which we would expect. So we have to start in our groups, which then go to the queues, which then go to the workflow, rather than workflow groups queues. So, that being said, we're going to go ahead and make our groups. Now, we made the mention before that the groups themselves need to be identified if they were going to be used in a manager type scenario, because they could only be used by that particular manager to help you help yourself. What we didn't mention was groups and queues and workflows are tied to an application server because the response group runs under the application engine. So you can't share a group that you create on the Redmond pool with a queue that's created on the Rome pool, for instance. You'd have to make a Redmond pool group and a Rome pool, even if they have the same users in it, because it is specific to that application independency. And you say, well, that doesn't make sense. That's not good. Well, it comes back to their independent pools. And if Rome goes away, it doesn't matter. Redmond can still function in response groups. If Redmond goes away, Rome can still function. It wouldn't if it was sharing information across pools and would be highly inefficient.
Right. You don't want to create that dependency across pools.
So you can name whatever naming convention you want. It's completely up to you. However, I would suggest you try to keep something, if you've got multiple pools, to have some sort of naming convention in place so that it makes your life easier. So I'm going to start all my Redmond stuff with manager, or Red, and the new manager. And then I always end my stuff with groups. So if I'm doing searching on names and objects within within link, groups are groups, queues are queues, and then off we go. Now, we're going to make a manager group. Typically, when we make manager groups, we make them formally have to log in. That's on purpose. We're going to leave it longest idle. And then we're going to go ahead and select a user, and in this case, it's going to be John, because John's the manager. Okay. We commit that, bring that into our group, and we have a Red manager group. Now, we also need, because we don't want just a group of only managers, we want the actual users, too, that are going to be taking calls. So we're going to make a user. See, and I do this. This is not uncommon. I've been doing this I don't know how long. This is where you're going to select it. Then we go to type in the name. I get ahead of myself. We want this to be informal. We want these people to be in no matter what. For our demo, we're going to have these people around Robin so we can see the calls flipping around each other, which is fun. And then we're going to pick Preeta and we're going to pick Holly because they're already logged in and that's simple to be in our group. Now, again, this order of how they're listed matters when we have serial. Other than that, not really.
Right.
Because it's a list of orders, a list. There's also, you could select from here a distribution list from Exchange. Hmm. That's an option to manage. But if you do that, you don't have the option to manage the order if you need that in the future. So keep that in mind. Okay. And from a managing perspective, I may not have rights over who's in a distribution group, but if I'm adding my users manually here as a group and I'm a RGS manager, I can manage that fully functionally and pull people in and out without messing with the distribution. Think of somebody's on vacation and somebody else is covering their phone and they're logging in as them. Okay, really bad scenario. But if it happened and you didn't want them taking a call, even though they're available, we could go ahead and pull them out temporarily out of the queue. Couldn't do that if you were in a distribution list and we wanted them to be part of that distribution list. So I typically don't use DLs, but it's up to you. Now we're going to go ahead and make a queue. So we've made our groups, now we can make queues. And when we go to make our queues, unlike some other stuff, we can make a queue without associating any groups, so it's not necessary to make a group first, but logically, you need it. So
right.
Let's go ahead and make our help desk queue. Q-U-E-U-E. This is going to be the queue for the help desk, as the name would suggest. Now you can see the groups is not a single selection, it is actually multiple. And the reason is this can be considered an escalation path. So we're going to try to hit the users in the red users group first. And then if that's exhausted or gone through its routing method, then we go on to the red managers group, all based off of a couple things. If we have a timeout, then it's based off the timeout. If not, it's indefinite. This thing just continually searches and searches and searches. So it's also interesting to know that the queue timeout is per group. It's not overall how things work. And there we go. We didn't really talk much because, again, things haven't changed since 2010. The alert timeout would be how long this person is alerted before the routing method went on to the next person. If you're doing something like parallel, that's irrelevant because they're all being rung at the same time, or attendant.
Right. So it's the first one who
it's really when you're serial or when you are in longest idle
or round robin,
then that's going to be ring this person for 20 seconds, then move on to the next one in the list, then move on to the next one in the list, right? Okay. So now we have that done. Yay, that was cool. We made a group, two groups, one queue. Now we can go to our workflow.
And we assign users to those groups.
So when we go to create a workflow, we will again be asked, where do we want to make this at? And then we will see a lovely Internet Explorer launch. And again, this is exactly what we had since OCS days, with a little additional functionality, but the interface is the same. And what we're going to is a web application. So let's log in as administrator. If I can remember the password. Of course, in IE, if we go ahead and set this domain as being a trusted internal domain, we just pass our credentials, which is what I would suggest. That works for your control panel. That also works for stuff like the response groups. Since we're waiting, that's here. I always do this, and at least on my LinkedIn link servers. Put it as an advanced, add that guy, star.onprem.local is the name of my server. Now, anytime I go to a page that requests my credentials, I pass my credentials in. Now, if you want to use different credentials, that's a bad idea because it's going to pass your credentials as logged into the box. But assuming that you are who you're going to enter anyway, you might as well start that way. When we get the response group, we have the same two groups we've always had, the hunk group and the interactive. Hunk group's the simplest. Interactive has to have at least two answers to questions as things go down. We're going to go ahead and create a hunk group to make life simple. And as we go to create the hunk group, we start with giving it a SIP name. Now, the SIP name is completely up to you what you want it to be. It's got to be valid domain within your SIP URIs, but it doesn't have to be anything at the front. Some people will use the phone number that they're going to be calling for the help desk. Let's say we're 12345 at blah, 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 blah. That's an option. Or a name, help desk, or Q1, or nobody sees it, unless they could. I mean, you could go into the SIP name and try to communicate with it, but that's not what it's there for. It has to be an object. Link ignite.biz. And then we have to give it a display name. And this is the incoming name, or when we're outbound calling to this name, what's displayed within our link client. On the outside of the world, nobody sees this. So this is an external facing call that will never have an internal user calling it. It doesn't really matter, but we do need something here. So we're going to go ahead and call this the help desk. Help desk. we just call it help desk. Telephone number. Now, the telephone number is what's creating, and this is what we didn't used to do in the OCS days, is this is what creates the contact object based off of the information we're in here, including our telephone number. So if we don't have the number that we want it to reach, whether it's a real DID or whether it's a number that's on the outside, it really doesn't matter. I'm going to enter +12345, which technically is valid. It's not a real number from the outside, but I can reach it on the inside. And then your display number. What do you want it to look like internally? You can do whatever you want here. We'll do exactly the same thing. Okay? Here's our workflow managed, unmanaged. We're going to go ahead and set it managed. And you would think add is browse. Add is not browse. You just need to manually type in who you want to be here. So you can click add all you want. If nothing's there, nothing happens. On-prem 123.linkignite.biz. And that just made this workflow become a managed workflow. Now we can select our default language. That's what the prompts are played back into. If we want to play a welcome message, we can. If we just want somebody to call into this and all phones start to ring, we don't touch anything. By default, it's 24/7. We could modify that. We could have holiday hours do special things. And this is where we go to make the queue. Now again, if we didn't have a queue and we went to hit deploy, nothing would work, right? So we have to have a queue pre-created, which is why we go left to right when we're right to left, when we're in the creation process, and we deploy it. Now you'll notice here we have a music file as well. If we use our default, then it makes our default music. We can also upload a file here directly, and it does the PowerShell command for us in the background. Okay, here's our help desk. Just like that, the help desk was created. Now, it is a cyclical thing, just like it is on the call park, where we need to wait for it to actually be created. So we can see the help desk queue is where we're at. The queue's been added, but we haven't actually seen our workflow been published yet. So you couldn't call the number. Once the workflow is listed here as being completed, we'll actually be able to make a call to this. While that's happening, though, we want to demo something else. Let's go ahead and make another hunk group. And this one we're going to call sales at... I should copy this and paste it so I don't have to keep typing it. On-prem 123.linkignite.biz. Smarter than the average bear, sales. Okay, this is going to be +23456. That is not a plus. And then we'll do it again. And then just like everything else, except we're not going to choose to manage this one. We're going to leave this one unmanaged. Now remember, we can't share queues across, right? So we're going to go ahead and try to create the help desk queue, but it's already got one associated that's a managed queue. And let's see how this guy's coming. Oh, creation of the endpoints there. Woohoo! Okay, so I'm going to say deploy, and we're going to get an error back that says you can't do that. That's a managed workflow. You're not a managed workflow. You're not the same. It's not one for one. Not going to happen. So that fails. Now, unfortunately, when I hit back, everything's still there. I'm like, oh, that's good. So let me go ahead and say, okay, let me manage it. And this one is sales, so it's going to be Holly. There. Now it's a managed queue. That should work, right? Oh, Bix. That's funny. Biz. Copy that. Let's get this right up here, too. Because that would never work anyway. But this won't work anyway. And I'll try to deploy that.
Did you click add?
Yeah. That's not going to work because, again, or maybe I didn't. Oh, I didn't.
No, you didn't.
So that was exactly the same example as the last time. Now we're going to do it again, but with Holly. Now, Holly isn't, now it is a managed queue, and it's not going to work still because that's a different manager, and we can't share managers across it. They can be the same if they were all the same across the board. Here, they're not. So if I came back here and I were to pull out Holly, and I was to put John back in because John owns the help desk queue.
That should have worked.
That should have worked. Let me try it again. Sales at sales. I know this works. This is our wonderful demo world.
That's what happens.
something goobered itself, but that's okay. Okay, try this again. We'll select our queue, deploy it, and we'll not.
Interesting.
Hope this queue is linked with two managed workflows. Yes, it is. Well, that will work someday, but that's okay. That worked in all of our testing. That's okay. We will move along. So now we want to show how the call flows work, which is really the advantage of all of this. So John's the manager. We saw that before. John is on client one. Yes. And so he's going to call plus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, I don't have a normalization for 5 digits, so I'm adding plus, so I'm forcing it to be normalized already. So it's going to traverse the system and get to the point where it looks for response groups. I'm going to call this number, and off the call goes. Off the call goes. Still going.
Still going.
It's thinking about dialing. It's beep, 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 beep. Okay, first we'll see that it changes to a nice, pretty bot looking thing because it's an application that's running. It's the help desk, right? This is where, if we were worried about what the information we were putting in to the various communication, respond, there we go. Here's where we put down the information of what his actual, again, we created, so this could be seen if somebody was looking for it. Doesn't necessarily going to be called, but this is calling into the help desk queue. Now, if I look up at Preeta, I see John's calling, and I see the call is for the help desk, but that's all it says, accept the call or not. She didn't accept the call.
So it keeps ringing.
So it's going to continue going through its loop of trying to find somebody that's going to call in. Now you saw Holly was set to yellow, so it didn't ring Holly because she was away, because it's presence aware. Now I'm going to go back to, I'll see it flip to Holly because Holly's now not away, she's available. And voila, now I'm getting the call coming into Holly because we're on this round robin where it's going back and forth and then nobody calls here, then nobody answers there, off it goes. Now, if Holly were to answer this call, we could see the call was for the help desk. And we'll also notice that Holly is the one that I see John's talking to because we didn't enable anonymity. So it looks like it all works. Everything's good to go. There we go. Now, another interesting thing. If I go to Preeta, that was 2, yes. And I dial the queue. Now, I'm a member of the queue, right? So I can't answer the call, I'll be in a call, so it's never going to ring me, but I may need to call the help desk too because for whatever reason, that's just the way life goes. So a member of the help, well, so was John for that matter, right? He was just the manager side.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to make this call. And this is from a 2010 user, so they were leveraging a 2013 response group from the 2010 because it's just a number. It's all the same to all of us. Off the call goes. And if we look, okay, we connected to help desk. We'll notice Holly is in this call. Now I'm going to ignore. Holly doesn't want to accept this call. Holly says, that's not my
that's
kind of style.
That's not nice.
And I'm actually busy. That means it can never come back to Holly because her presence says, don't bother me. Here's Preeta. And we didn't have a timeout on this queue, so this will sit here forever in a hold in this queue. And this is where things could potentially stack. And because Holly ignored the call and then went to busy, she's not available, off she goes. But what if she said ignore because she knew she had to do something real quick? Now she's back. So now she's going to reset her status. And now she's back available to be in this queued line. So the next cycle comes up, she will actually start to prance out. Now, John, you will notice, John's been ignoring all of us. That is not the list I wanted. I don't think I can get to it from down there. Well, the other day, we were not, this was not launching IE, and it's not still, of course. So it is down. Oh, maybe I can move this. Again, let me move my taskbar to the left. Now, let's go right. Ha ha. Now I have to remember if I remember. HTTPS.
So where are you connecting to right now?
Ryan? Redpool. What do you mean?
Which URL are you connecting?
I'm going to the response group management one that if that button had worked, would have taken me to. But luckily for me, I just know all my URLs by heart.
So you're just going to it directly.
Clients, tabs.asmx, I think it is. We'll copy and paste that just in case that's wrong. Yeah, I'm just going directly to where that application should have been going. When we get into this unlicensed in 2013, product features start to deprecate. Things stop working on purpose because you're not licensed. So makes it for a little bit more difficult in a lab, but... not administrator. I'm John. Okay, same function would hold true if we had that value within here to allow us to pass our credentials, which I don't on this particular VM. When this comes up, it's going to show me my communications options of what pools I'm in or not in. We come back to Holly, we see she's getting notified. Again, she's available again, and that's why she's back in queue and being taken advantage of. If we were to say that she was a BRB, as soon as this expires, she's not going to get notified again. If we go back to Prita, she's still on there. Hold. It's 3 minutes. Still counting. Good for her.
She's patient.
I thought it was tabs. Maybe I don't remember my pathing so well. Try again. Just do it. Now we can go look it up.
Use the force, Luke.
We use the force. but I can't get to my E stuff here. Maybe we won't. RGS clients. Yeah. Tabs.aspx. And it came up this time. Lab is demos. Awesome. So I'm going to go ahead and select that I want to be signed into this group. All groups, which I only have one. And as soon as I do, bam, my calls start to come. So you can imagine the scenario where our manager's hearing calls just ringing and ringing, but nobody's picking up because they're busy. Or you've got some third-party monitor that shows queue calls backing up in the queue. They can come in here and check it in. Now, once I've done that, I can go ahead and answer this call, and the escalation happens. Now, if I don't answer this call, you'll notice... call isn't currently ringing to Holly because we've escalated and I'm on the BRB. So I'm stuck in the escalation path. If I reset my status to available, we're now going to go cycling through the order of groups that are back. And let's go back to our order so we can see. Within this... Yes, I wish to. If I look at my queue, my order is red user group, red manager group. Because there's no timeout, we're flipping back and forth. We're going back and forth. We go through all the users, then we're going to the manager. Then we're going to all the users, then we're going back to the managers. So, John's not being called right now. Oh, he just got called again. Oh, so Holly was just called. Again, this is just kind of moving through the system and probably a bad user experience if you didn't plan accordingly. So it's really important to test these things and get the planning of what you want it to be. All right. So, Preeta gives up and hangs up after 5 minutes of nobody answering. That's the way it goes. Okay, now we're going to go ahead and make a couple modifications to this particular one. A couple things we want to do. First, we want to enable a queue timeout of 20 seconds. Then we're just going to drop her. That way she can't wait more than 40 seconds or 60 if there were the people that were in there. It's 20 for the first group queue, 20 for the next group queue. Off you go. Because we're using the same users, this really is only going to be 40 seconds total. It does take a second for this to take, and we're going to go ahead and add anonymity to our workflow as well, so we can see how that looks different. Now, you'll know this has taken effect because anonymity won't be there. That's one option. Or you watch your event viewer again to see what's going on in the queues. We'll say that this workflow queue is just for FYI. You can see what number is associated, but as soon as you say create, edit, or double-click on it, it takes you right back to IE. So FYI. Okay, so we will try to beat the system, actually. It should not, unless it's on a cycle. So it's possible the queue's been updated, but nothing else. So I'm going to go back to here and do +12345 again. and I'm going to call. And then I'm going to move properties this back to the left. So I can go down. And I can see, as the call's coming in, the call's for the help desk. And if I answer the call for the help desk, I see Prita there. I'm like, oh, I thought I enabled anonymity. And again, that's because things haven't cycled through the system fast enough yet. We need to wait for the response group to actually update itself prior to us trying to force the system to do things. So response groups have been updated now, we hope. So we're going to go back and try the system again. And this time, we will see a different looking interface when we try to make the call. So.
And when you're talking about cycling through, it's really what, when you make a configuration change in the control panel, it actually has to go back to the CMS, to the master configuration.
Everything is
replicate
to cycle
all
through.
That. Yeah.
There are, everything's on a cycle, and so it's pulling changes from the one database to the other, and then the others push and pull on it, and the database from an edge perspective, we're pushing to it. So everything is on cycles and things are happening. So it may take up to 5 minutes of making changes. It could be instant if that cycle is just about to happen, you just made the changes and it's notified about it. So
Right. Because all the changes that have been updated to control panel or PowerShell are in the CMS, the central management store.
Right.
And then that has to be pushed to the local copy in the SQL Express of all the link servers.
Okay. So let's go ahead and watch our call. And we'll see at the top now it says anonymous call for help desk. Mm-hmm. So by seeing that, I know by default that if somebody's trying to call the help desk, that I have, in fact, the ability to Now I'm getting it, Prita's getting it over here on John because John signed in. We don't want John to get calls anymore. But if he answers it, you'll notice anonymous is everywhere. So it's from the receiver's perspective, they're aware that it's anonymous. And on the caller's perspective, all they see is I'm talking to the help desk. They don't see the person's name, they don't have a callback information, and that's what the anonymity gives us, so that's a great thing. Okay, let's see. With that, I think we are good on time. We're good on demos, we're good on information that I think was interesting, so hopefully,
Well done, Brian.
That was good. We have, from a call flow perspective, when we think about potential call flows that are a little bit more compelling, the stories that you're going, we have one that, for instance, we have that comes into a hunk group, and into that hunk group, it immediately starts to ring the receptionist. The receptionist didn't answer in a specific amount of time. It forwarded to another group. That group was the receptionist plus the backup receptionist. If those people didn't answer in a specific amount of time, that queue rolled off and then went to the main auto attendant in exchange. In exchange, they then get the queue list and potentially could hit zero and go right back to the IVR. And it could do all of these flowing. But the idea was we wanted to try to reach a human person first and then the backup human persons. And if none of those were available, we want to accept the call so it just doesn't keep ringing and ringing and ringing. In fact, we set their default timeouts to 12 seconds, more or less 3 rings, rather than the default 20, so that it would kind of speed up that transferring process. As long as we stay within response groups or stay within auto attendance, it's fairly fast transfer. There's a slight delay for leaving systems. You're leaving system. You're going from exchange over to the IVRs or auto attendance or hunt groups within Link. There's a slight transfer delay because we're actually transferring the call. We're not just cycling through loops. But it allows us to have nighttime operations where we're answering things, daytime actions that are different queues that go to queues that go to queues. We obviously don't want to get too deep. That isn't generally a good user's experience. In fact, that's one of the main reasons why in the IVR that exists in the web, when we go to create an IVR, it's limited to 4 groups deep with 4 groups, and that's it. We don't allow. You can create deeper groups than that within PowerShell, and we could make this a massive IVR where you hit one for this, and then you go to another group and hit one for this, and go to another group and hit one for this, and get 17 layers down.
But the user experience.
But the user experience
bad.
Suffers.
Yeah.
And again, this is designed for small, immediate, little help desks, little departmental group solutions. Maybe it's your internal HRMS. And so you're calling for your health benefits. And so there's 4 people that man that particular phone. You want some sort of managed solution instead of just a team call. That's where it fits really, really well. When we're looking at bigger things, consider something bigger. That's really what it's designed for.
So. And there's a lot of third-party products.
Oh, there's a lot. And they all tie in natively to Link or partially, depending on what you're looking for. They provide functionalities and ACD reporting and can get huge and massive in deployment sizes. So that's really where we'd go with this is test, test, test. You don't understand what the application, especially response groups, are going to do until you actually put it into a lab environment and test it. If you don't test it, there's a good chance you're not going to know exactly how it's going to respond when timers expire, when people aren't available, what the end-user experience is like, and that would be what I would push out. So with that, that's it for this particular demo. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back. We're going to continue on with another session, and we'll see you then.